Again, we'll start the recording. Good evening. Today is Monday, April 15th, and we're studying the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This week's chapter is There is a Solution, and our speaker tonight is Andy M. Thank you, Andy.
Hi. All right. We'll try this again. Hopefully this works. I'm having trouble with my internet service apparently, so now we're just off of the internet service altogether. I just went with my iPhone and the eight, whatever, it doesn't matter. All right. So there is a solution. I assure you there is one. The way when I give a share, even when it's a share on a specific chapter, I kind of like to give my bona fides, my qualifying. Then I like to spend a little bit of time on what recovery was like, how I got into recovery, and then I like to spend all the time talking about what my recovery is now. But I'm going to start with one of my favorite sentences in There Is a Solution, which is from page 23, and it goes, "Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body." Right? Well, when you consider that my top weight and my weight for most of my 30s and 40s was in the upper 400s and my top weight somewhere in the 480s, for me to say the problem was in my mind and not my body, sounds funny when you say to like medical professionals and nutritionists, of course it was in your body. Nope, problem is in my mind. So just to kind of give a background, I believe I was an addict from the start. I believe that I probably wanted more, even breastfeeding. And I know that some of my earliest memories are stealing ice. Oh, do you guys mention foods? Okay. So like some of my earliest memories are, stealing ice cream and, from the, we had an old-fashioned refrigerator and you pull the freezer out from the bottom and I try to skim the ice cream off and so nobody see how much I ate, and then you're like, okay, well, if you do that and you've eaten three quarters of it, like they're gonna notice, or like how do you reshuffle the cookie? Cookies in the cookie jar, so nobody notices how many of the cookies you ate. Like those are some of my earliest memories, and I mean like not even being able to get over to the counter memories. So yeah, I was had issues with food as a very young child. As I moved forward in my life, when I was in high school, I also discovered two things. One was that I really liked girls, and they didn't really like me when I was really fat. And the second thing is I discovered alcohol, which was a great way to meet some of the same needs. I grew up in some very challenging circumstances, and I believe that for me at least, my disease is genetic, and my disease is in my mind, and there are a number of triggers for it. And I, but the causes are not important. The solution is what's important for me. And as I went through rough times and found that I could deal with them by developing a lot of negative character defects. And the cheapest was anger. One of our friends here in this meeting today actually introduced me to a way of saying it that I like. Anger was my love language. I learned to eat to say take the feelings and use anger to defeat anyone that would question anything about me whatsoever. It's a reaction to being child of abuse. It's a reaction of being in a very difficult situation growing up, and that's still I recognize my side of the street, and I've done my amends. And as I got older, and I got into college and high school, I mean college and graduate school, I found a profession that I loved. I found a woman that I was eventually married, and that was a interesting thing for me. It didn't matter if I was in 300 plus pounds or 400 pounds. I still managed to have a lot of success. And I realized in my late 20s that the alcohol was a bit of a problem. And I was what they call a high bottom drunk. And so I went to a therapist who took me to AA, actually NA and AA. And I first encountered the 12 steps there. And after a year or two there, I stopped drinking altogether. And so I like to say I put down the alcohol and I picked up the food with both hands. I put down the alcohol with one hand, I picked up the food with both hands. So very shortly, I was well over 400 pounds and spent much of my time there. And I'd go in and out of the rooms and I'd try this diet or that diet, or I'd lose 100 pounds. You know, when I was up in the 450s, 460s, and then eventually 480s, I used to say I lost 100. I didn't even count the first 100 pounds, you know, if I went on a diet, because I lost 100 pounds like that, like no problem. Of course, I could gain it back just as quickly, actually more quickly. And that actually, interestingly enough, is what brought me to recovery, which is you do that enough times and you will damage your body pretty severely. And in the course of my eating, I broke both ankles, both bones and both bones in one ankle. You know, and you know, I, slipping on the ice may or may not have been a result of my body type at that point, but the way that I landed and landed directly on my ankle, I snapped that bugger like a twig. You know, I broke five bones in four metatarsals in my one foot doing that. I you know, by the time I went into recovery for real, as I like to call it, I also had exacerbated a heart condition known as bradycardia. And I was to a point where what I do for a living, I work with young children and I'm on the floor a lot with them. And I had an incident where I was racked with pain. I had a series of the strain I put on my legs caused me to have a series of muscle convulsions that were so painful. I was rising on the ground in the middle of an assessment, humiliated myself in front of professionals and a family. And, you know, the professionals were all friends and they were actually very, very kind, but the family I felt horrified for, you know, come in with this little kid and they want somebody who's competent to evaluate them. And they've heard great things about my team. And, you know, there I am, this 480-pound man writhing on the floor, screaming in agony. Like, yeah, that was good. So that was kind of a bottom there. My relationship with my spouse, for a variety of reasons, was even worse than I could have imagined. You know, I there are two sides of the street, and I'm very aware of how badly my side of the street needed to be cleaned. So 2015, I hit bottom. You know, my work had been influenced badly. My relationships with my wife were hindered terribly. You know, I still had a good relationship with my son, but I understood that I was physically limited on what I could do with him. And I was drained. I was emotionally drained. I was physically drained. And I had been in the meetings before, in and out. And I kind of hit a point where I talked to the person I was married to at the time. And I said, you know, she was seeking some therapy specifically to understand more about me. And so we, I talked her into saying, let's do therapy together. And we went to somebody who specialized in eating disorders. And, you know, we went to the first one or two of those sessions and I realized I really needed to be with a group of people that really understood my disease. And wouldn't you know a guy, I'm going to say his name. He's a great gentleman. He's in his mid-80s now. His name's Bob B. And Bob B is in my intergroup out here and outside of Philadelphia, Brandywine intergroup. And I'd been in and out of the rooms a few times and he just, every once in a while, called me and he called and he said, hey, Andy, you know that meeting you go to in Overbrook Presbyterian? Well, I hadn't been to that meeting in 10 years. You know that meeting you go to in Overbrook? I just want to let you know, it's actually moved because they've had a such and such and they're going to be, and there's going to be a really great speaker there. I'm like, he acted as if I hadn't like stepped out of the rooms ever. And I was like, well, Bob, I actually can't make that, but you know that Tuesday night men's meeting that you run? Tell me about that. And as I'd been in that a couple of times, and he said, oh, great. So he told me about that. And I called, and I haven't left the room since. That was 2015 and 2017 was when I was getting a handle on my abstinence. And from 2017 on, I've had very long, I'd like to say I've never relapsed. I have. Currently I'm down 265 pounds. The lowest I've been is down about 320. I struggled a bit this winter when I had to go on steroids, and anyway, it was that's an excuse. I struggled. Never left the rooms. Never left my sponsor. My sponsor never left me, and that's what's, you know, wonderful about it. So, kind of thinking about there is a solution. What I love about that particular chapter is it sort of defines my understanding of my disease, right? It's not a matter of how heavy I am. You know, I struggle just as much with life, you know, whether I'm 480 pounds or whether I'm, you know, 270 pounds or if I'm 160 pounds, it doesn't matter. And what I mean by that is that life goes on and I have to know how to do it. And the first step I'm powerless over food. So I'm powerless over food and my life has become unmanageable. And when I turn my life and my will over to my higher power in the third step, when I finally got that, I finally got what that means for me. I said, or I realized, hey, you know what? Like, that's everything. I'm going to actually work the steps. I had to hit bottom. I had to be miserable and unwell in every way to finally say, hey, I'm willing, you know, here's what I'm willing to do. I'm willing to say I blew it. You know, can't do it on my own. I've tried. I'm a pretty bright guy. Got my graduate degree, good career, whatever. Basic thing is, the plane can't fix itself in midair. You know, somebody else has to do it. The way I oftentimes think about it is I love horror movies. And when I was a kid, one of my favorite horror movies growing up came out like 78, 79. This woman is young babysitters in the house, and she keeps getting a phone call. And the phone call says, you know, check the children. You know, the children are upstairs. Have you checked the children? And, you know, she calls the police and the police, oh, put a tracer on it. And then, you know, the big climax of it is, you know, they call her back and they say, you know, the call is coming from inside the house. And, you know, and of course she, anyway, it's good. I mean, it's a good movie if you've never seen it and you like horror. But that's me, right? Like, it took a long time of me doing absolutely everything wrong because I didn't understand that the problem was coming from inside the house, right? And I needed someone, something, some entity. I use God. I happen to be a person who follows the Christian faith, so I'm comfortable with that verbiage. I believe that anyone can recover as long as they understand they're not the solution. That the higher power is the solution. And as such, there's my favorite paragraph, and there is a solution. Whoops, if I get to the right one, it's here. And there's a lot of good paragraphs all over the big book, but it's this. The fact is just this, and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences, which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, toward our fellows, and towards God's universe. And that's really the promise. When you think of the promise of this program, you know, you're going to revolutionize your whole attitude towards life, towards your fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lived in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. And we don't do it by ourselves. We do it with the will of, you know, with following God's will for me and understanding the higher power. And I kind of want to mention my conception of higher power a little bit. And the reason I'm going to mention it is because I don't define it. I think the world spends, for me, the world spent a lot of time telling me what God should or shouldn't be. And I had to shed myself of some of that. When I learned to understand God and what He could do for me in my life. And so when I talk to people, I've had the experience in meetings where people have said, well, how do you understand God? And I say, well, I try very hard not to. I just accept that God is there and that, you know, and I use He, that He's there and that He is the only thing that keeps me sane. You know, it is what I turn over my day daily to, and it's how I work my program. How am I on time, Rachel?
You've got 6 minutes.
Oh, good. Coming on and off, I kind of lost track of it. So and here comes kind of how I work my program, and I'd like to share this because it was what works for me. Other things work for other people, and I love hearing how people work their programs. I get up in the morning. When I get up in the morning, the first thing I do is pray. Then I go and I make my meal plan, and I start making my breakfast, and I make my lunch at the same time because I usually take it with me to work. And I'm planning my dinner, and I say some prayers of gratitude, you know, gratitude that I have the food, gratitude that I don't eat it all, you know, gratitude for you know those things in my life that are good, and I pray to accept those things that are harder to accept. I like the Lord's Prayer, and I say a variation of it. And the variation is for me, I substitute in the King James Version, you know, daily bread, I say three abstinent meals. You know, in the section that says, you know, forgive me for my trespasses, I say, and help me make amends for them. You know, and, you know, when it says, forgive those who trespass against me, my line that I always add is, or that I perceive trespass against me, because that's one of my defects of character is I'm very willing to accept that anything you say or did was specifically to tick me off, you know, and I've been very fortunate, that then my next set of prayers is my step seven prayers, and they are often to remove the defects of character. And I don't really usually have to go too far to find my defects of character. I will tell you the hardest thing for me in terms of recovery was understanding that for a variety of reasons, my marriage, the person I was married to at the time, our relationship was damaged beyond repair. She moved on in many ways, even though we were still married, and I had to accept that too, and a radical acceptance. I can accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Well, some of that is asking God for the having the willingness of asking God to help you find that, and I did, and you know, went through it. Challenging divorce, which for me and my background was very hard, and then you know, many years later, I've found someone in my life who I love a great deal. But if you ask me who saved me, that's my higher power, that's God, and that's always my number one. So the other thing I'll say is that as I work through the program, you know, kind of keeping in mind there is a solution. You know, the short version of the third step prayer: Thy will be done. When I feel that little gerbil cranking inside of me and I know that my mind isn't where it should be, I do my 10th step. I check and see if there's anything I need to make amends for. I pray to God. I tell someone else in program, and I immediately turn to give service to someone else or something else that will help move me out of my own mind, because my mind's a dangerous place to be. I once heard someone in an AA meeting say that, it's probably the only time I'll curse in this sharing, but she always used to say, you know, being in your own mind is like being in a bad neighborhood with an asshole. Guess who the asshole is? And yeah, that's me. So I do step out and give service, because it gets me out of my mind, out of my self-absorption, which is very helpful for me. The last thing I'll say is gratitude. My gratitude list has saved me so many times. I'm having a bad day and I'm like, oh, this happened and this happened. And, you know, I got a complaint at work, or I'm dealing with six different things, or, you know, whatever. And I'm, you know, I'm just really, you know, my mind's starting to crank, and I pause. I take a couple of breaths. I meditate for 30 seconds and I go, oh, okay, what am I thankful for today? And it might just be, you know, the nice person that said hi to me when they gave me my coffee that morning at Wawa. You know, it might be, hey, you know what? I ate an abstinent meal at lunch instead of stopping at McDonald's, Burger King, and Kentucky Fried Chicken in three stops in a row. You know, it might just be, you know, that the rain is coming, but it's not too cold out. Like, I can find anything to have gratitude in, because there's an awful lot to have gratitude in. And honestly, when you've got issues with your heart, a pacemaker, you've been 480 pounds, you've messed up your legs, and you know what condition you could be in, sometimes it's just enough to have gratitude to be alive. So, and that's my share. I'm look forward to hearing everybody else's thoughts on that. And I would just say one more thing. Anybody who ever relapses, I'm telling you, the step you trip on is the first one. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you very much, Andy. That was awesome. We will now open the meeting for questions or for 3-minute shares. As this is a big book study, sharing and questions should relate specifically to the chapter and step being studied this week. We ask that you accept this guideline in order to keep the meeting on track. If you'd like to share or ask a question, please raise your virtual hand, which is under reactions, or star 9 if you're on the phone. I will call the raise hands in order, and the Zoom host will ask you to unmute when it's your turn. Will the timekeeper please set a timer for 3 minutes for each share and announce when time is up? If the speaker is asked a question, please allow 3 minutes for the answer. Jackie, please share with us.
Thank you. I'm Jackie from South Bend, Indiana. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater and really glad to be here. Thank you, Andy. I really love that paragraph you read about the great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had a deep and effective spiritual experience. Up to the side, I put miracle. You know, I had to have a miracle. And that our Creator has entered into our hearts and our lives, and which is indeed miraculous. And I am so, so grateful for that. And, you know, the other thing you said was about gratitudes. And I have a gratitude partner in the morning that I talk to, and we pray then after. And then I do my gratitudes at night also, which are different from the morning, and I send them off to two people. And it really has changed from the negative thought patterns to more positive thought patterns of just life on life's terms. It has really helped me. So thank you for sharing about that. With that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Jackie. I would like to step in and share. You know, Andy, when you were talking about that fellow who called you about that meeting you hadn't been to 10 years, I got such a kick out of that. And it's just proof that God works in such mysterious ways. And that, I mean, of course, that exact scenario didn't happen for me, but it was the way I was always loved and treated and accepted by fellows that got me back. I had left for a couple of years, and I heard about a fellow who had died from cancer. And going back to 2011, this was in 2019. And I came in 2011. She was actually the first person to ever give me an outreach call. And I was floored by that. I just thought, wow, what a nice thing that they actually use those numbers. Anyway, I wasn't in OA at the time when I heard she died, and she was such a dynamic and wonderful human. And I went to her memorial service, and all these OA people were there, and I hadn't seen them. It was a handful of years, but they just, you know, it was as if they had seen me the day before or something. And it was so emotional for me. I had been kind of dipping my toe in the water at that point, sort of, not even really. But I was so emotional when I left there. I bolted out of there. I felt like I was just going to explode. I'm getting choked up right now thinking about it. But yeah, this fellowship, I mean, that's just one amazing scenario, but I could write a book in just 2 years of the amazing coincidences, in quotes, that have happened just with the like timely phone calls, or, you know, I don't know, somebody coming to mind and that they needed a call from me at that very moment. And anyway, I love that. I love that story. And I appreciated your share. And also, I love that the reminder that it's what I perceive, you know. All right, so I'll pass. Claudine, Take it away.
Hi, I'm Claudine, recovered compulsive eater. Andy, that was a really good share. I felt it. And it's just a story of redemption and how things can radically change. And I so related to what you said about anger, because that was my go-to defense mechanism. And I'm still a threat to do that because it's armor made out of dead leaves, basically. I mean, it's this bluster and threatening and all that kind of thing, when really it's just built like a wounded animal. But I really related to that. And I absolutely love the analogy of when a stranger calls. I mean, I'm dating myself, but I babysat through middle school and high school. And that was the most terrifying movie ever. It was terrifying. And I would call my mom when I saw the commercial and all that stuff. But it's such a good picture of it, the caller's right there. It's right there inside of us. I mean, that really spoke to me, because this disease should be that terrifying, and it's right there in us. So we've got to surrender and get help. And I thought that was great. And I really appreciate you sharing the vulnerable parts about your relationship and how, you know, there is a lot of loss in this disease. There just is. There's fractures all over our lives. And, you know, we can look back in our stories, and it doesn't take the pain away, or it doesn't change anything that's happened. But there, God does restore us. I mean, He does. And He gives us happiness and so many different blessings in this program. I mean, the weight is so secondary to all that He blesses us with. And I heard that in your story. So I really appreciate that. And I'll pass.
Thank you. Thank you, Claudine. Mackenzie, share with us, please.
Thank you. I'm Mackenzie, compulsive overeater in Wisconsin. Andy, thank you so much for such a rich share. So much of that resonated with me right away, even from your opening about, you know, like believing that you've had this physical allergy since day one, like since, you know, being an infant. And some of my earliest memories are about food lighting me up. And so I can relate to that part, but I can also relate to very early memories of being ashamed of my body. And when I was 4 years old, I was in ballet, and I scratched and scratched and scratched my shoulder until it turned red so I could wear a t-shirt over my leotard, because I didn't want to show my body as a 4 year old. I always felt I had parents that loved me, but I always questioned whether I was lovable. I always questioned whether I was enough. I never felt like I fit in with friends, just restless, irritable, and discontent. And, you know, I spun my wheels. I have like a 22 year history of bulimia, and I spun my wheels for a couple of decades, just thinking if I could figure out the right way to eat, if I had the right meal plan, if I did keto or intermittent fasting or whatever else I was trying at the time, if I could just figure out the right way to eat, that it would solve my problem. But that didn't solve my problem, because I didn't have just a food problem. I had an illness in my spirit and my mind. And I love that passage that you read, especially the part about like God comes into our hearts. And I don't want to mislead anybody. I come into program binging and purging every single day, 5-6 times a day. And in the past 2 months, I've had one day that I binged and purged once, and it is an absolute miracle. I'm only on step 4. I haven't been through all 12 steps, but I already feel God reaching into my heart and transforming me. And God is transforming the way I think, like you talked about the gratitudes and just becoming more positively focused. And the other thing that you mentioned, your story about being in a bad neighborhood between your own 2 years with an a-hole, like, and, but the power of getting out of that and doing service, that what I'm learning about doing service and thinking more about other people and what I can do for other people and invest in the stream of life. You know, these are ways in which God is transforming me in my heart. And what's happening is that the food obsession is being removed because of a spiritual solution. So, with that, I'll pass Mackenzie in Wisconsin. Thank you.
Thank you, Mackenzie. Lisa, I think will you stop the recording, please?